Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you things to think about. Such a difficult time out there today. So many worries. So many different things coming down on you. You know, banks coming down, cranes coming down, houses coming down, worries everywhere. But, you know, about one of the questions we have is, what does this worry do to us? How does it affect us? You know, what effect does it have on us? One of the questions we have is about sleeplessness. Sleep is such a fascinating subject, and today I want to talk about insomnia and various things about insomnia. Now, you're going to think, I'm sure you're going to think I'm going to come up and say to you, you got to sleep more. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure, even though everything seems to indicate that disturbances of sleep lead to disturbances of being, so what? So disturbances of non-good nutrition. You know, when we were kids, we couldn't get any fresh vegetables, and we didn't. And we lived without fresh vegetables, so we got by. And people in different countries in the world get by without fresh vegetables. So you can't say it's essential for health. It may be essential for maximal health. Sleep is a similar kind of thing. I suspect sleep, if you examine it, you can find a maximal sleep and you could find a minimal sleep. Now, it's different for everybody. You know that thin people seem to have chemical positive reactions to less amount of sleep than heavier people do. The more weight on your body, the more you need to sleep. Well, that makes sense, because if you think about it, what's the idea? Why do we need to sleep at all? Who invented that? Computers don't sleep, right? I mean, nowadays, it's a whole new world. We used to have a world where, you know, you could 18 hours during the day, you got things to do, and for 8 hours, there was nothing to do. It was dark. You just crawl up to your honey and do whatever you could do for as long as you want to do it, and then go to sleep. But nowadays, we have a 24-hour day. You have the internet. You could listen to The Positive Mind day and night. You could go to, you could order things outside. You can go to stores. You can get in your car and go to an all-night drugstore no matter where you are. So the world has opened up to a 24-hour day. Why are you sleeping 8 hours a day? What makes us think we need 6 or 8 hours? So that's the question. The question is, we do or we don't. And maybe we do and maybe we don't. And I want to talk about sleep. So I'll start off by describing something that was written by Mary Sykes Wiley, who's quite an interesting writer. And she wrote a description of sleep and sleeplessness. And I thought I'd give you the credit of this. In fact, I was going to do this with just a sense of what it's like to feel sleepless. So I want you to imagine. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Your eyes suddenly snap wide open and you stare unblinkingly into the darkness. You try to remember the dream you were having, but it's gone. And anyway, you're now as tightly tuned as a bowstring to the mysterious night noises of where you live. Every noise, the pings, the drips, the rustles, the hums, the creaks, the sound outside, the fire engine, sends little electrical jolts going through your nervous system. You're determined not to move. You're sure, because if you move, you know you're going to be awake. So you lie very still, and you clamp your eyes tightly shut again. Though they fight back, your eyes want to reopen. You're aware of a dull inner pain in your lower left side, or up near your heart, or deep in your belly, or behind your right eye. How long have you had this pain? What does it mean? Do you have cancer? Is it a stroke? Is it a heart attack? No. Just lay quietly. Relax your muscles. Breathe slowly through your diaphragm. Watch your breath. You think to yourself. But your body doesn't want to lie still. A cascading series of itches, prickles, cramps, and aches begin to bring an unbearable restlessness. So, roll over to the left. Curl up in a fetal position. Roll over to the right. Stick one foot out from under the covers. Roll back to the center. Straighten your legs, bend your legs, flex your feet, stretch, yawn, scratch your stomach, scratch your upper back, rub your eyes, drum your fingers on the covers, throw off your covers, pull up your covers, pound your pillow, massage your temples, crane your head around to look at the clock. It says 3:13. Try the breathing thing again. By now, your hyperactive brain is in full gear. A gazillion neural networks are churning out memories of fear, loss, frustration, fury, humiliation, thoughts of failure. Every failure you've ever had, going back to college, to your seventh grade, to kindergarten. Even now, you start thinking about that horror movie you saw, and you start reliving the horror movie and how much it scared you. And you try to work that through, too. It's 3:15. Meanwhile, your heart pounds in dread for all the horrors that undoubtedly await you for tomorrow, because should you live till then, you feel a jab of panic. Sleep, damn it, sleep. You're going to feel like crap all day tomorrow. You may order yourself, feeling your heart pick up speed at the very thought. And if you're lying next to someone, you listen resentfully to that person's deep, regular, innocent, animal breath, hating him or her for not joining you in the night of sorrows. And if you're by yourself, you might sigh, sit up, turn on the light, arrange the pillows behind you, begin reading a book that you almost fell asleep over and over just a few hours ago. But you can't concentrate well. You feel exhausted. After reading the same paragraph 12 times, you ever do that? I've done that, dozing off. Go back, same paragraph. What was it? What was that? What was that? You get up, you go out of bed, you go to the bathroom, you turn on the light, you know. You take a look in the mirror and you look at yourself. You go, oh my God, how haggard. It's now 3:25. You know, and you begin wandering aimlessly around your house like the undead. You're looking for different windows at the quiet nighttime neighborhood. You know a great hallucinatory certainty that everybody in your community, your town, your state, everybody within 4 to 6 time zones, uncounted millions of people, are all peacefully asleep, all except you. You, however, are widely awake and absolutely, utterly alone. What a drama. So that's the way it feels. And I know some people who have listened to this just feel like I crawled inside their brain. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Sleep. Sleep. Maybe you're sleeping now. You know, there's different things about insomnia. What is insomnia? You know, and what is it? And what would we use as a working definition? So for a working definition of insomnia, we'll say you just don't get the sleep you need, you know, or you want to be able to get, you know. Let's not make it too complex. Let's make it the following way. You know, the body has a system. We work on a thing called the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system has two parts to it. One part is the part of the autonomic nervous, they called it the autonomic nervous system, by the way, because they thought, used to think it was automatic. They thought you couldn't control it, so it was automatic. And it's your nervous system, and it has all the things, and it splits into two parts. One is the sympathetic nervous system, and the other is the parasympathetic nervous system. Stay with me. It's like your right arm and your left arm. Your right arm is your sympathetic nervous system. Your left arm is your parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is the thing you use for action. Fight, flight, you're awake. You got to get out there. You got to get things done. You got to do. It's everything. It's running, jumping, leaping, preparing. Sympathetic. Parasympathetic is what's used to get your body back to regenerate the cells that are necessary for you to continue your job. So sympathetic nervous system burns off things by running. Parasympathetic system goes into effect when you rest. Parasympathetic nervous system helps you grow cells, lots of cells, helps you replenish hormones. Like we talked about the importance of serotonin. You need serotonin. You use it up during the day, you replenish it at night. And many other things. Okay, so back to sympathetic nervous system, very big action. Whenever you're nervous, sympathetic nervous system. Panic attack is called sympathetic overload. See, nice phrase, it's exactly what's happening. Not so sympathetic if you think about it, you know, I mean, because, geez, have a little sympathy, will you? It makes me crazy. That's sympathetic nervous system. When you sleep, you repair. Now, when you sleep, and if you get a certain amount of sleep, you repair. Naps are not doing it, but there's a certain level of sleep and a certain period of sleep that you have to have in order for you to properly prepare. Repair all your damaged cells. But, hey, what if you're in war? And you don't sleep for 4 days because, you know, you're afraid somebody's going to come over the bunker at you with a rifle or something. Or what if you're living in a terrorized zone? Or what if you're, you know, what if you just can't sleep? Can you get by? Absolutely. You get by. You'll get by until you fall down. And then you'll sleep, you know? So it's not that we don't get by without it. There are so many people I know who have to work 3 jobs, and they barely get through, and they're like walking zombies, but they are getting by because this is what they need to do. They got to keep the kids going. Whatever they've got to do, they sacrifice sleep. They sacrifice part of the repair of their system. They don't care about how long they're going to live. They don't care about, I got to keep it going for 20 years. They care about, I got to get through the next week. I got to feed my children. So sleep is overrated. It's good, but it's not totally, totally, totally necessary. However, what would be great is if we could maximize our sleep to the point where we get the right amount that makes us feel great, if it's possible. How do we do that? That's a good question. How much is the right amount? There's a thing called too much sleep. I think it's called hypersomnia. The insomnia means too little sleep. What's too little? Well, in some of the studies we did, we found that there are things called sleep cycles. A sleep cycle is a 90-minute, approximately 90-minute cycle of sleep. It means 90 continuous minutes of sleep, an hour and a half. You need an hour and a half. That's a cycle. And it turns out, and I'm really reducing this to making it a little simple, but it works. It turns out that if you have a 90-minute sleep, and then most people after 90 minutes, usually they have, it's called one sleep cycle, thereabouts, give or take a few minutes, they wake up. Usually you wake up a little, you just get a little alert, then you go right back to sleep. You can either go right back to sleep, you can get up, you go in the kitchen, get something to eat, go back to sleep. Get up, go to the bathroom, come back, go to sleep. But it's a 90-minute complete cycle. How many of those cycles do you need? Well, it turns out that there is a place where you get crazy. Crazy meaning your mind stops repairing itself, and you wind up with increased levels of things you don't want and decreased levels of things you do want. For example, if you don't get sufficient sleep, you increase your cortisol. We talked about cortisol, increased cortisol. It makes you very tense. You know, and it makes you tense, and you walk around tense. You can feel that when, you know, when you can't sleep, your shoulders are like a rock. It's like you're tired, but it's a terrible feeling, right? But if you're at a rock concert, and you haven't slept all night, and you're waiting to get tickets to get in, and you're dead tired, and your body is falling apart, and you haven't slept all night because you're sitting online trying to get in, and then you get in, and then you stay there all day until the next morning, and you don't sleep, but you're in that druggy kind of sleep, you could enjoy it, you know? That's what Woodstock was. Nobody was sleeping at Woodstock. Okay, so going back now, here we have these 90-minute cycles. How many cycles do you need? You need? Well, turns out that we used to need many more than we need now. Let me see what that statistic is. 20 years ago, we needed much more sleep than we need now. 20 years ago, it was like 10 hours. 10 hours, say my engineers. 10 hours 20 years ago, you needed 10 hours sleep. Now, that's a funny kind of thing. Why do you need 10 hours sleep? Well, the body chemistry was adjusted to 10 hours sleep. There was less stimulation. There was less visual stuff out there. Now, we're down to about, get this, 5.5. 6 hours, good night's sleep. 6.5 hours, extra sleep. 8 hours, loads of sleep. Over 8 hours, we start to go downhill. 10 hours, we start losing things. There is too much sleep. So let's go back again. What happens when you sleep only for one cycle, right? That's 1.5 hours. No good. Not enough to repair. The trucks come out, they get loaded with the cement for your hormones, they're going to rebuild your hormones. Okay, let's bring over that little, let's get that endorphin over here, and let's get the endocrine glands over here, and the trucks come out, and they're ready to repair you, and they put you on, and it's 1.5 hours. Oh, well, we don't have enough time. And they send the trucks back. No. if you're gonna fix your brain, you need at least two of those cycles. So you need two of them. So now they're there, and they're with all the, here comes the neurotransmitters, and here they come. Now we're gonna repair your brain, and they make the cells work a little better. And you secrete these fluids, and you're getting better, and you're relaxing. Two cycles, you can get some of the job done. Three cycles of 90 minutes. Whew, all right, we did enough. We did enough to get this person ready for tomorrow. Three cycles of 1.5 hours, which maybe sounds like 4.5 hours, but it's not, because usually there's a little time in between, where you're awake, or you go to the bathroom, or something, little times in between where you get up, you fall asleep, so on and so forth. So we talk about, it looks like 3 hours, but it looks like three cycles of 1.5 hours are essential. But is this true? And, I mean, who made this up? It seems to be, according to all the research I could find, but then there's this additional research I find, which is that most sleep studies have been sponsored by companies that make sleeping pills. So we have Lunesta, we have Ambien, we have all these drugs that are helpfully there to make you sleep a more solid sleep, and they tell you how much sleep you need to have. And they scare you into not having enough sleep. So they make up these drugs with these names like Sonata, you know, or Sonesta, whatever it is. Ambien, these beautiful words. And they convince you that you need this solid night's sleep. And so now we have to be careful, because we don't know what we're learning, you know. If the research indicates one thing, so I've got in front of me now, there must be 50 studies in front of me in one form or another about who says what about sleep, but I wonder what the sources are. What do you know about yourself? How much sleep do you need? Now, for example, would 8 hours, is 6 hours sleep being at a Caribbean beach the same as 6 hours sleep in your house? You know? Does the setting make a difference? Is sleep always the same? Is there a deeper sleep than other sleeps? Do you sleep with one eye open? Do you sleep when you're sleeping with somebody? When you hold somebody in your arms, is it the same sleep as when you don't? Now, most of you know the magic of sleeping with somebody who you really care about, and you go into this kind of dozy sleep, which may be actual sleep or not sleep, but it certainly feels reparative, doesn't it? People tend to sleep together. They like it for some reason. The danger in our society, when somebody invented a king-size bed and the people started separating and sleeping on separate sides of the bed, they weren't sleeping together anymore. You know, sleep was magic between two people. You hold somebody and you doze off. You hold somebody, you know, my spooning or whatever it is that you do. Magical stuff. So if you sleep alone, do you need more sleep than if you sleep with somebody else? It's a good question. You know the answers, and you're going to be telling me later in today's program, because I want to hear from you about it and your own sleep patterns. And I'm going to continue this discussion with you this week because I think this is so important. Right? Let me get you to say something about the torture of sleep, or sleep being used as torture. First, let me start with drugs. How do we imagine if sleep is a chemical process, and we know it's a chemical process, you got to release certain things, you got to get other things, we know all this about sleep. How do we imagine that if we take an antibiotic, which is running rampant through your body, doing all kinds of crazy things, your sleep is going to be the same as if you don't have an antibiotic in you? The antibiotic is working on all your cells. It's calling up things. It's calling, it's sending messages everywhere, right? It's surging through your blood. You think you sleep normally when you take an antibiotic than when you don't take an antibiotic? Of course you don't. You're sleeping with an alien inside you. It's like you're a chimera, which is another show we'll do sometime in the future. You know, you have this visitor alien. All right, not that. Let's say you take something that's a natural substance. It's St. John's wort. It's surging through your body. Is it like you're sleeping a regular way? No, you're sleeping plus. You know, a lot of people take, what's this stuff in Turkey? The sleep aids, the different sleep aids that people take. People take different things. They take natural substances. They take hormones. They take melatonin. They take a whole bunch of things. But those are things that are inside your body. And now while you take them, although they may help you sleep, keep in mind it is not you sleeping, it's you sleeping with your drug or you sleeping with your chemical. Why do I bring it up? I bring it up because once you get used to sleeping with a chemical, when you stop the chemical, you sometimes can't sleep. And it's not just a sleeping chemical. If you take the ones that I know that are the biggest cause are the painkillers. Percodan, OxyContin, all these heavy morpho kind of, you know, drugs, the codeines, all of these painkillers, they seem to set up a relationship with you. They allow you to sleep out of fatigue, but they keep your cortisol levels high because these drugs are meant to make you be immune to pain. They're meant to make you close off pain. So you're like in a painless condition. So now you have this painless condition of your body. Well, why should you have a painless condition while you're sleeping? Well, if you do, you're sleeping numb. And if you're sleeping numb, that's one kind of sleep. Now you take the pill away, and let's say the person says, I'm not going to take these pills anymore. I'm going to stop taking my painkillers. They can't sleep, because they've lost their sleeping partner, because it takes time. So chemicals that are put in the body are one thing, and chemicals taken out of the body are another thing. I mean, try fasting for a night. You know, try fasting. See how that affects your sleep. Without food in your stomach, see what it's like. It's hard to sleep. Try having too little water or too much water. See what it does to your body. All of these things affect you in one way or another. Chemicals are a major, major source of insomnia in one form or another, taking them or not taking them. And when we get back from our break today, by the way, I'm going to talk to you a little more about the different kinds of insomnias and definitely be taking your calls at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. But that'll be in a few minutes, okay? So now we went to some of the studies of sleep deprivation, and it's kind of an amazing thing. They learned a long time ago that one of the best ways to torture somebody is to take away their sleep. And they look for, it's been used by practically every dictatorship in the world. The United States uses it when we torture people. We keep people awake. They used to keep prisoners walking around so that, that they don't be able to sleep and they would confess to anything. Let me see. Chronic family causes intense suffering. Enforced insomnia is unbearable. So the Greeks and the Romans used it. Medieval interrogators use it. They call it tortentum vigilae, meaning you're keeping the vigil up or waking torture. They use other grotesque methods. They get confessions from the alleged witches by keeping them awake. The English used it in the 17th century, and they named it waking the witch, the phrase. But it was only our own enlightened era. We have 24-hour lightened and sound amplification technically available. We sleep-deprive prisoners. And that's, I'm sure, one of the main tortures we do. We did it during the Second World War. Palestinian and Israeli, let me see. As I state, the Israelis used it on Palestinian militants, and the Palestinian factions used it on each other. The British and the IRA members used it. The Pinochet dictatorship used it. Saudi Arabia, Tunisia used it on their own enemies. You know, it keeps a conveyor belt of you going, and what's it like to be kept awake, kept awake, kept awake? In fact, one of the things they discovered during war is they found that if they blast loud music across a battlefield during the night and flash lights, they would stop the other soldiers from sleeping. And it began used. They used this at the end of the Second World War, and they used it in Korea, I know. And it became a way of warfare. Make that person not sleep. Keep them awake. Don't let them sleep. It's like cutting off their food supply. Cut off their sleep. So as an act of torture, it has been known to be comparable beyond hunger and beyond thirst. The only torture I know that is the equivalent of the lack of sleep is cold. Something happens when they reduce the body weight, your body heat, to a point where you start to freeze. The body goes into a certain kind of panic. Well, the same thing happens around the lack of sleep. But thirst and food, you could do without. I mean, do without longer, but not sleeping. 5 days of not sleeping make you nuts. You hallucinate. The chemistry goes bad. And I mean, it really goes bad. Let's talk about the chemistry for a minute. The two big hormones, two big things that you need to have are prolactin and you need to have human growth hormone. Human growth hormone is a lot bigger than people think it is. You know, human growth hormone is a kind of a hormone that replenishes the proteins. It's like, it is what it sounds like, human growth hormone. You grow with it. That comes with sleep. Prolactin. Hey, lack. You ever hear the word lactin? Lactin, milk. Build up the milk. So, in other words, prolactin kind of prepares the lactation of the human. Now, the lactation is not just a female giving lactating stuff to her baby, but it also induces a kind of a dreamy-like, peaceful state, which is why when people have orgasms during sex, or whenever they have orgasms, they frequently will have an orgasmic peak where they feel these endorphins going off and they have a wonderful experience, and then they feel this drop away, and the drop away supposedly is prolactin. And the prolactin comes in and you just kind of feel like, oh, I think I'll roll over and go to sleep. Or I feel mellow or stuff like that. That's prolactin. So lack of sleep inhibits production of prolactin, increases production of cortisol, which we know makes you tense, decreases the reparative actions of growth hormone, and so what? So what? So you get by a little while without prolactin and without that. You know, it's just how long can you get by? How long do you need? What are your priorities? Being able to learn about sleep and learning all you can about it is very, very important. Trying to do whatever you can to maximize your benefits is very important. But worrying about how little you get and spending your life in bed worrying, oh my God, this is really horrible, that's sometimes just as costly. We're going to take a short break. This is Armand DeMille. When we come back, I'll play you some music. I bet you can't guess what I'm going to play you. And then I will take your calls. Be back with you shortly. Thank you. Hey, friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind and the Beatles. I'm so tired, of course. Of course. Do you know that Graham Lawton, in The New Scientist, he said that the more we understand about the body's 24-hour clock, the more we'll be able to override it. And he says, and that's what we're doing. We are overriding it, the need to sleep. We're overriding it. We're getting ourselves chemically better. I mean, just think about the fact if you drink green juice or you do something nutritionally that you know repairs your cells better and you increase your immune system and you make it more effectively, then you don't need as much sleep because you're balancing it on the other side. Right? I mean, what they gave vitamins to soldiers. I don't know if they had any meaning whatsoever, but the idea is to try to balance it on the other side. Well, he says, in 10 to 20 years, we'll be pharmacologically able to turn sleep off. 20 years from now, you won't even need sleep at all. May not need it, he says. $20 billion a year are spent on sleep paraphernalia. That's almost enough for a fifth of an Iraqi war. I'm sorry. It just flings through my mind when I see those billions going there. Eva Van Corder, a sleep researcher at the University of Chicago, has studied the chemical effect of sleep deprivation, and she's found that the loss of even an hour or so of sleep for 2 to 3 nights in a row results in attendant decreases of that, what I was talking about, the hormone, human growth hormone and prolactin. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't get by without it. You can get by and with interrupted sleep, but somewhere it's going to catch up on you, and you have your own history for this. So I want to take some calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille speaking about insomnia with you, 212-209-2900. I'm going to take some of your calls. Also, keep in mind, if you do have a lot of insomnia, nap whenever possible. Naps don't do the repair, but naps do some repair. You know, there's something about nodding off in siesta, you know what I mean? And there's some countries where 12 o'clock, let's go to sleep. And they really do. They nod out for an hour. You know, gee, imagine, think about your average lunchtime. You're working a job, you get out of your job, you go run, you get some kind of cruddy sandwich. You get that same old stuff you've eaten every time. You get the salad, the same salad, the same juice, kind of boring food because you work in one particular spot and you keep them. Imagine if you could have slept for 45 minutes. Imagine if you could have napped, right, and woken up to a little bit of soup or something, just something really light. What a difference it would make, but we don't. We don't do it that way. Napping is underrated. You know, it's got some good stuff to it. Let's take a call, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls. We just got to queue it up at first.
Hello?
There we go. Hi there.
Oh, hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm excellent.
I want to wish you a happy belated birthday. I know it was March 14th.
Hey, thank you for knowing. Yes, it is. It was Pi Day. Pi Day, which is March 14th, which is 314, which is because pi is 3.14, etc. And it's because it's Albert Einstein's birthday as well.
Right. Yeah,
that's how I remember when my birthday is.
Right. Right.
But thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Armand. I always like listening to you. I always learn new things from you.
So tell me about your sleep.
Oh, my sleep is fine. I never have any problem sleeping.
And do you do any naps?
No, I don't do any naps.
And you never have any trouble sleeping?
No, I don't. Well, sometimes, but very rare, if I go to sleep really early, like let's say I fall asleep at 8 o'clock at night, I will get up maybe 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and then what do you do?
I usually just stay in bed. If I have to go to the bathroom, I'll go to the bathroom, but usually I stay in bed.
And you just hang out with yourself for a little bit, and then you get ready for the next cycle. You see, that's what I was talking about with the cycles.
Right, the 90-minute cycle.
Yeah, you kind of wake up out of a cycle. You know, one of the dangers that people do, one of the mistakes people do, is they have alarm clocks set that wake them up in the middle of a cycle. Now, according to this cycle theory, you know, if you can go through a 90-minute cycle, it's fabulous. If you have three 90-minute cycles in the middle of a night, that's great. That's great. If you have an alarm that wakes you up in the middle of a cycle, you feel wrecked. And it's one of those ones where, oh, how do I get up? It's almost like you want to hit the thing. You know, you want to hit the clock and make it go for another 15 minutes, but usually you don't have the timing right. So I would recommend to people, if they could possibly estimate the number of hours they were getting, set your alarm to try to be after a complete cycle. And I would say that would mean 4.5 hours or 6 hours.
But I don't know if that's so easy to do, though.
Because never easy.
Yeah, because you don't know when exactly you're going to fall asleep.
That's right. You're absolutely correct, you know. But, you know, so it's like it's some kind of an attempt. But sometimes if you have the consciousness of it and you wake up, and I've done this. I wake up and I said, uh-oh, middle of a cycle. I'm going back to sleep. And I actually will go back to sleep until I could feel repaired. If I have that luxury. I don't frequently have that luxury. But I'll get it. You know, I could feel it. You could become attuned to it.
Right. Well, I know that I used to be able to. I probably still can do it. But I know that I that I was able to do without even having an alarm clock. Before I went to sleep at night, I would say exactly what time I would get up, and I would wake up at that time or maybe a few minutes before.
What nightmares did you have when you were a young girl?
Oh, God, what nightmares. I don't remember what nightmares I had.
Was it repeated?
Repeated nightmares?
Yeah.
I don't recall even any nightmares or anything to tell
you. No night terrors? No waking up in the middle of the night as a little girl?
Well, I'll tell you something. I know it's sharing with the audience and everything, but I'll be honest with you over here because, Armand, you never cease to amaze me. You hit things on the nose. When I was a child, and my mother was separated from my father at the time, we would have outside our window, it's a sad story for me, it really is, and when I think about it, it's really, really sad. It really, really is.
Do you mind going through with it? Because it'd probably be helpful to a lot of people to hear it as well.
No, I don't mind because
okay, I'm with you.
People and everything, and I love the way you always hit things on the nose and everything. So what happened was we had outside the window, you know, you could climb outside the window and there was a roof there. So my mother was fearful, and I think she would find in the morning time cigarette butts over there, you know, on top of the roof outside our window. And I always slept with my mother. And which I wish that wouldn't have been the case because then I couldn't sleep by myself as a child. So I'm about, 5, 6 years old, and I was sleeping with my mother. Oh, my God, I can't believe how emotional I'm getting about this.
Yeah.
And the thing is that...
And your dad's not home any longer.
I would have to take turns with her to keep guard. And I would, at times, I would feel too nervous to go back to sleep.
Sure.
And she would be sound asleep and everything, but I would be too nervous to go back to sleep.
You would be on guard.
Right, I would be on guard. Exactly.
And your father was gone.
Yeah, he wasn't there. They were separated.
So you're separated, but there are these strangers who are smoking cigarettes outside on the roof who could come right in your window if you don't keep watching.
Right.
And you were scared, and you were protecting your mother.
Exactly. I knew there's always reasons why I call you, Armand. I haven't called you for years.
Yeah.
And there's always reason, but I'm glad that this is coming up. But the way that you always hit it, like, what kind of terrors was I waking in there? Yeah.
What's your name?
Kathy.
Kathy. So, Kathy, when after a while, your mother would then take turns, and she would sleep, and if she
Well, I personally never remember her being awake, actually. Maybe I woke up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I don't think she was. I think you were the guard.
Yeah, I was the guard, yeah.
And when did your mother die?
Excuse me?
When did your mother die?
Oh, my God, when did my mother die? You see, you don't, you hit everything on the nose. My mother died over 30 years ago.
And since then, you've been able to sleep peacefully?
Yeah, I have been. Not since then. I mean, you know, there were periods of times when, with my divorce, that I couldn't sleep.
Same thing. Divorce was just like your father leaving. So when you went through your divorce, it was just like your dad leaving. There was nobody to protect the house.
Right, exactly. But even prior, you know, even during my marriage, when my ex-husband would go out and be out late at night.
Same thing.
I couldn't sleep.
So it's the same thing. The guys with the cigarettes on the roof could come in. You weren't being protected.
Oh, my God.
So when you finally got rid of all three of these, you know, your husband going out late at night, your husband finally divorced, your dad going away, your mom dying, all of that happens finally, and some way you say to yourself, it's just me with me, and from that moment on, you sleep peacefully for the rest of your life.
Yeah, right, exactly. And why is that?
Because you didn't have to be a guardian anymore, you know?
Oh, my God, I didn't have to be a guardian anymore. That's it. I didn't have to be a guardian anymore.
Yes. At least you got some time to rest.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because now I sleep very peacefully and I sleep soundly.
Going, Kathy. Thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
I welcome you anytime.
Oh, thank you so much, Omar. I appreciate that.
Sure. 212-209-2900. You know, we're about to take another call, but I want you to know about dreams. They believe that everybody dreams, but there's this thing about the amygdala, which is a funny little nut of a organ in your brain. Tiny little spot, but seems to be the seat of a lot of emotion and anxiety. And sometimes the amygdala just fires. You know, it's like sometimes it gets hit by a lightning bolt. Sometimes the chemistry in your body just gets together in such a certain kind of way that it starts sending off these signals in the amygdala. Now, here's what happens. You get these big electrical discharges. Zits going all over your body. You know, little chemicals like neurotransmitters firing. And they're kind of bumping into each other instead of going where they're supposed to go. Because the body system, the organs, the hormones, everything kind of works together. Your heart has to beat with your lung, and your lung has to work with your heart, and your stomach has to work with your lung. But when the neurochemicals... When the neurotransmitters are being fired and there's a little kind of bumping into, and it's not exactly right because maybe you ate something or maybe you had something, you know, you're in a tense position, these neurotransmitters seem to focus at the amygdala, and what happens is you have this amygdala firing. Now this firing takes place and you suddenly feel wired, but you're asleep. See? Now, you're asleep, and before you wake up, your brain is going very active. Now, your brain is saying, danger, 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 danger. Because that's when your amygdala would be firing the most. Remember I talked about sympathetic nervous system? Sympathetic nervous system is when you're in danger mainly, when you're trying to take care of things. So now you're going into the sympathetic danger reaction while you're in this parasympathetic sleep mode. So you're like a zombie, you know, you're asleep. But you're awake. Now, what happens is the brain says there's danger somewhere because I could feel the electrical discharge. And the mind says, where's the danger? And it looks for danger. And it searches around. And the first place it searches is inside your brain. And it looks inside your brain for images. And it says, ah, it's that movie I saw. It's that car coming out of the ceiling. And it puts funny things together, and you have nightmares, like I'm falling out of a tree, or things get put together to make up for this firing in your brain, which is going crazy, and you're just trying to account for it so that if you could spot the enemy, then you could do something about it. So you're looking to find an enemy, and that's why you wake up with panic. And you wake up, and if you ever see anybody having a panic attack, which is the amygdala firing like crazy in the middle of the night, when they sit up, they're sweating like crazy, as if they've just been working, and they're looking around. They're looking around. Where's the enemy? Where am I? That's the feeling. Those are not nightmares. See? That's a kind of a nightmare. The nightmare is a whole different story. And tomorrow I'm going to talk to you more about nightmares. But those are, you know, alerts and sleep alerts. And they are saying that there is chemistry going on, and they're perfectly normal. They're perfectly happy. I mean, you could exercise and bring yourself to that place. You could improve your immune system and bring yourself to that place. But those don't mean that you're psychiatrically disturbed, although we in the profession would like to convince you you are. And in fact, other professions would like to convince you you have a thing called restless leg syndrome. Whoever made that one up, and we now have a drug for it. 212-209-2900. Let's get one more caller in here. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand. Happy belated birthday as well.
Thank you very much.
You know the reading you did? Can we get a written copy of that somehow?
Oh, I don't know how that... I put that together after chopping apart a whole thing. Now, the best you could do is get it from the Internet. You could replay the show and write it down.
That was awesome. That was really, really great.
What, my description with my music?
Yeah.
Oh, I had that music. That's a music I collaborated on with some people a long time ago. It's just such a fabulous piece. And it does nothing because it's kind of haunting. Listen to me. The haunt of this thing, you know?
It was spot on.
And it just goes. And you felt like that, huh, in your life?
Oh, and I know people who do.
Yeah.
I'm in a house with someone who roams around at night, and I definitely would like them to hear it.
Well, let me ask you something about the guy. Is it a man?
Yep.
He roams around at night. Now, this is a very interesting thing. When he roams around, what does he do?
Eats, goes to the bathroom, on the computer. It's in-law. It's father-in-law.
Okay, now, is he... Father-in-law, is it part of any kind of brain disturbance? Is he getting older? Is he a wanderer? Has he got Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia?
Not that is diagnosed. But, you know, there's, I think, prostate, urinary kind of stuff. I mean, that can get you up and still working. So,
does he take medication to sleep?
I'm not aware of that. I'm not sure. So I don't really know.
Okay, what's your name?
Jay.
Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the things that you get is like there's a side effect. It's called foraging. And I want you to get this idea of what foraging is. Some people wake up in the middle of the night, and it's not like they are waking up. It's like their alter self is waking up. It's like their spirit is waking up. And they get up, and they're not really awake.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not sleepwalking either.
Right.
So they're kind of halfway there. And the way you could always tell is they forage in the refrigerator. They don't look to eat something that's good.
Mm-hmm.
They look to eat something. It's like they're not looking for, I think I'll look for some good cookies. They kind of do funny things with what they eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they eat something funny, but it's like foraging. It's like, I got to get up and I got to find something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to do something with my time. And you'll generally find that person has an interrupted cycle, but when they go back to bed, they go through another hour and a half cycle. Did you ever observe if he goes on hour and a half cycles?
Oh, I definitely, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And he's also a napper, serious napper.
Yep. Could be great and could be not so great. You know, I mean, could be great to nap a lot, and then sometimes napping too much takes
I think it's too much napping, definitely.
You understand. See, you know that.
Yeah.
You know that he's losing oxygen to his brain.
Yep.
You know that he's got his pulse ox down somewhere around 95 degrees, 95% of his oxygen. And you know he's functioning with less oxygen, and the less oxygen you have in your brain, the more tired you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy obviously needs to get oxygenated, however that could happen. So if you've got a prostate problem, that's one of the things that will definitely interfere with that kind of lung function indirectly because of the holding of water. You know, you hold that water back, and that throws the entire system out of balance.
Right.
Nobody's thought about taking care of this prostate problem once and for all?
Well, life is complicated.
I understand.
I'm saying, and
I got you, sure.
We have no control over people, places, and things, right?
Yeah.
So you do what you
so
can.
So does it make you angry?
Sad. I think sad when people aren't able to optimize.
But angry at him because he doesn't want to take care of himself?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Okay,
you
so
know.
Take it. Take it, Jane. Take it. It makes me angry that he doesn't want to take care of himself, and yet I don't want to say anything about it. I want to give him the respect of letting him be who he is.
Right.
But know that you're angry. Know
yeah.
it. Know
yeah.
it. And just
okay.
keep that nice and present. Don't even share it with your husband. Just know to yourself
right.
that a lot of this just irritates you because you wish you didn't have it imposed on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got to take care of myself. I'm too tired. I'm too tired to be angry.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Armand. Bye-bye.
Right. Listen in tomorrow. We'll talk about nightmares. Hey, and also I want to tell people to take a look through your PBS on the 20th. The 20th of March, which is a couple of days from now, on PBS, I think around 9 o'clock, there's going to be a showing of the film Home. Now, why the film Home? It was produced here in New York City. It has a whole bunch of people in it that are just great. And I'm in the film, too. And it's about New York City. It's really a film about New York City. It's got Woody Allen and Susan Sarandon and a whole bunch of great people. And so you might want to look, if you have TV or TiVo, and you can kind of look for that. It'll also be on another station as well during the week, H-O-M-E. Just look for it, Home the Movie. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., and we'll do some stuff on nightmares. Eh? Nice to talk to you all. Thank you very much, Kathy and Jay, and Michael G. Haskins, of course. The website is thepositivemind.com. Or WBAI.org. Either one, and you'll be able to rehear the program.
That's right. A big thank you to you, Kathy and Jay, and a big thank you to Armand DeMille for another edition of The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. He'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. You are tuned to listener-supported commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Coming up next at 2 p.m. will be the Arts Magazine Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 p.m. and at 5 o'clock, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The WBAI Evening News at 6 o'clock. An announcement or two, and then we will join the Arts Magazine here on WBAI.